Welcome to Through the Bible with Les Feldman, a 30-minute walk through the Scriptures, teaching in-depth Bible truths that change people's lives. Now, here's your host, Les Feldman.
Okay, good to have you all back after our break, and we'll go into program number two, and let's see, we're in book 77, and we're in the middle four programs today. So hopefully by the end of book 77, we'll connect the dots, huh, Jerry? Hopefully. But we'll just take it as it comes. So anyway, we're always want to, what shall I say, thank our TV audience for your prayers, your financial support, everything. And as I've said it before, I'll say it again, mail time is something else. And one of my girls from the office is here, and not just the mails, the phone calls as well, isn't it, Delina? My, how we appreciate all those kind phone calls. And, you know, I don't need any financial pay. That's enough in itself, just to hear how folks are being exercised by the Word, not Les Feldman. It's the book that's getting them exercised and excited. So anyway, we'll continue right on now in this program where we left off in the last one, and we'll do that all afternoon. We'll just go until our time runs out. We'll take our break and come back on the next one. So we're going to jump right back in on the kingdom concept in Isaiah chapter 9, a familiar couple verses, verses 7 and 8. 6 and 7, I'm sorry. Verses 6 and 7. Oh, I'm sorry. Iris wants me to let the audience know once more, we've still got our one and only book and 88 questions and answers. And if it weren't for her, I'd have fallen apart a long time ago. But we like to let folks know it's a well-received book, and it's got a lot of information in it. And it's nominally priced, so call if you're interested. Okay, back to the subject. Isaiah chapter 9, we're going to continue on getting ready for the New Testament introduction of the thousand-year reign of Christ. And it's been promised ever since Israel became a nation. See, that's what I'm trying to show, that this isn't just a New Testament concept. This is something that the nation of Israel has been promised almost from the time of Abraham, definitely since the time of Moses, and that's why we started then in Exodus chapter 19. All right, but now we're up to the prophets, 700 B.C., up to Isaiah, verse 6, "For unto us, the nation of Israel, a child is born, unto us a son is given," and I always connect that with John 3:16, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son." Well, I connect that. This is what they got. "And the government," looking ahead now to the time of this royal family coming to a head in the person of the Messiah, the Christ, sitting on David's throne, ruling from Mount Zion in Jerusalem. Never lose sight of that. It's going to be an earthly kingdom on which God the Son himself will rule and reign. All right? This is all prophecy yet, 700 years before Christ. "And so the government shall be upon his shoulder. His name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace." See, all those are titles that God the Son will wear, you might say, when he becomes king of this glorious kingdom. All right, now verse 7. "Of the increase of his government." Now, what does government speak of? People. Government is what controls the masses. Without it, you've got anarchy. And so here, even in the kingdom economy, we're going to have a government. It's going to be a benevolent government. It's not going to be one of high taxation. It's not going to be one of penal punishment and all those other things. It's going to be heaven on earth. But nevertheless, it'll be a government under the rulership of the king. And then later on today, or whenever we get over into the New Testament, we'll see again how that the 12 apostles of Israel will each rule one of the 12 tribes of Israel. They'll sit on thrones underneath the throne of Jesus himself. All right, but here we have it then, that the increase of his government and peace, there'll be no war during this kingdom, and that shall be no end, because it's like I said in the last half hour, it'll slip right on into the eternal environment. And so he's going to sit there upon the throne of David. See that? I made reference to it in the first half hour, that it's the throne of David on which Christ will sit on Mount Zion in Jerusalem. All right, so he will sit upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom to order it, to establish it with judgment, that is, rule, and justice. There'll be no bribery. There'll be no corruption. And it'll be from henceforth even forever, because the zeal or the authority, the sovereignty of the Lord of hosts will perform it. Well, now that's about as plain as language can get, isn't it? All right, now turn the page and we go into another aspect of his earthly kingdom, and that is the animal kingdom. Isaiah chapter 11. Now this isn't heaven, this is the kingdom. You know, I think I made mention the last taping. Somebody sent me a book that he had authored, or someone had authored. I think a guy did himself. And he was speaking of what heaven will be like. Well, all of his references were these kingdom references. This isn't heaven as we think of heaven. This is the earthly kingdom. Now, keep that straight. This is the heaven that Israel is looking forward to on the earth under the headship of their Messiah. But it's not the heaven that you and I think of, which is, of course, in the heavens of the heavenlies. I don't know where it's at, but it's certainly not here on the earth. But this kingdom is simply going to be a heavenly-like environment, but on planet Earth, with the capital now in Jerusalem. All right, now then, on planet Earth, we're going to also have aspects of the animal kingdom. And let's just jump in at chapter 11, and let's start at verse 4. Again, we're making reference to the king. But with righteousness this king shall judge or rule the poor or those who are at the bottom of the totem pole. He'll reprove with equity for the meek of the earth. Now, of course, whenever I read that verse, I'm always reminded, when did Jesus address these things? Well, in the Beatitudes. The Beatitudes, see, they're the constitution of the kingdom. And they make far better sense if you leave it with the kingdom than try to bring it into Christianity today. And so he will. He'll make equity for the meek of the earth. He shall smite the earth with the rod of his mouth. That, of course, is previous to all this. With the breath of his lips shall he slay the wicked. That was all accomplished before we opened the kingdom. But now verse 5, and righteousness, absolute perfect fairness and equity and honesty, everything will be without any smack of pollution or corruption. It's going to be perfect. See? All right, verse 5. Righteousness shall be the girdle of his loins, faithfulness the girdle of his reins. Now verse 6. Now we jump into another aspect of the kingdom. The animal kingdom. It's going to be there. The wolf shall dwell with the lamb, because the curse has been lifted. They'll no longer be carnivorous. They will eat as they ate back in the Garden of Eden before the curse fell. All right, the leopard shall lie down with the kid, the baby goat, a calf and a young lion and a fatling. They'll all be commingling. And in the midst of what used to be carnivorous animals, what? Kids are playing. We're going to be playing with these wild animals as we look at them instead of cats and dogs, or along with cats and dogs. I shouldn't say instead of, or somebody's going to get all shook up. And say, wait a minute, I'm not going to have a kitty in the kingdom. But we just know that all these wild animals now are going to be domesticated. They're no longer going to be carnivorous. And I'll show you why in the next verse, verse 7. And the cow and the bear shall feed, their young ones shall lie down together, and the lion, the fiercest of all, shall eat straw or forage like an ox. Well, if it can forage like an ox, it doesn't have to kill something else for its food. So everything is going to revert back. Now let me show you from Scripture. Go back to Genesis again. Like I said in the last program, we got to keep reviewing Genesis because it's been many, many years since we taught it verse by verse. But you remember back in Genesis chapter 1, Genesis 1, verse 30. Now, this is before Adam ate. This is before the curse fell. This is how it's going to grow back when the kingdom is set up, just like it was in Eden before Adam fell. Genesis 1, verse 30. And to every beast of the earth, to every fowl of the air, to everything that creepeth upon the earth wherein there is life, in other words, every living thing, I have given every green herb for food. In other words, everything in God's creation ate and survived on things that grew naturally. They didn't kill anything. Why? Death was still unknown. Death was an unknown factor back here. And so nothing died. Consequently, nothing killed something else for its food. Everything ate of that which grew naturally. Well, it's going to come back to that. Now back to Isaiah 11. This is why then the lion will eat grass and forage and so forth, just like cattle. And all the other carnivorous animals, the same way, they'll eat of the herbs and forbs and so forth. And now verse 8, the nursing child shall play on the hole of a asp or a poisonous snake in our time. And a larger child, a weaned child, shall put his hand on a cockatrice den without any harm or danger. And then verse 9 is the promise. See? They shall not hurt nor destroy. Nothing will die. Nothing will go back into uselessness. All right, they shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, that is the kingdom, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the water covers the sea. Now, isn't that a fabulous promise? You know, I think I read years and years ago that the human capability of even the brain that we have is only about 5%. That's all we can use, is about 5% of our capability. Well, now, can you imagine what will happen when God gives us full knowledge? And we are. Paul even speaks of that we will have full knowledge and understanding. And so that's why, you know, when questions come in that are kind of hard to answer and over which a lot of the theologians like to argue, you know, my favorite answer now is, well, hey, if it doesn't affect where you're going to spend eternity, if it doesn't affect your daily life, why worry about it? We'll find out when we get there. We're going to have full knowledge. We're going to understand all these things that today are in a state of unknown. But we're going to have this kind of knowledge as the waters cover the sea. Now, that is for these here in the kingdom. And, of course, I'll have to refer to the church's experience in the kingdom at a later time. But anyway, the knowledge of the Lord will cover the earth as the water covers the sea. All right, now let's just move on up through our Old Testament, and let's go on up to chapter 66, I think I want, in Isaiah. Isaiah 66, just to give you a little glimpse of what it's going to be like in... I know where I wanted to go. I'm sorry. I want to jump all the way up to Jeremiah. I might come back to Isaiah 66, but I wanted to go to Jeremiah 31. This is what I wanted to see first. Jeremiah 31, 31. We've looked at these verses before. Jeremiah 31, 31. And again, the Lord is speaking through the prophet. And look what he says. Behold, the days come. Now, what does that speak of? Out in the future, see? Doesn't say when. But sometime out in the future, saith the Lord. Now this is a promise now that he's giving concerning the believing element of Israel. Now you want to remember, only a small remnant of Israel has ever been believers, or will, even as we saw in our last taping, that only one-third of the Jews of our present time will become true believers and go into this glorious kingdom. But nevertheless, this is the promise that God makes to that surviving remnant that will enjoy these kingdom promises. 31:31, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will, it's going to happen, I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. Now that makes me stop again. You know, there are so many people, not just the worldwiders, but a lot of others, who still think that the 10 tribes were lost and disappeared and only Judah and Benjamin survived. Don't you believe it? God never lost a single tribe. They were all intact when they went out into the Babylonian captivity. And don't you ever forget that. When they came back from the Babylonian captivity, Ezra, Nehemiah speak over and over of the whole house of Israel. Not just Judah and Benjamin. The whole house of Israel were represented going out and coming back. And so all the way up through the Old Testament, it's a constant reference, not just to the tribe of Judah, but to all of them. And then when you jump all the way up, now let's just do this, because this is what I have to do with Scripture. Jump all the way up to Acts. Keep your hand in Jeremiah. I'm not through there by any means. But just to see what I'm talking about, jump up to Acts chapter 2, the day of Pentecost. And Peter is preaching his Pentecostal sermon. Oh, let's see. I was going to use even more than just one. But one will do for now. Verse 36. Got it? Acts chapter 2, verse 36. And remember, he's addressing the Jews that have been gathering there around the temple for this feast of Pentecost. And look how Israel Peter addresses them. Plain English. Acts 2, verse 36. Therefore, let all the house of Israel, not just two tribes, all of them. See? Let all the house of Israel know assuredly that God hath made this same Jesus Lord and Christ. They're all there. Now, if that's not enough for you, just keep going. Go all the way back to Revelation chapter 7. Now, how can they be lost when Scripture has got them right in front of you? I'll tell you what, the devil is a master at spreading the lie. You know that, don't you? He was the father of it, and he's the master of it. But we're not going to follow a lie, we're going to follow the truth, see? All right, Revelation chapter 7, verse 4. And I heard the number of them which were sealed. And there were sealed 144,000 of all the tribes of Israel. Two? All of them. Now, when you take all 12 tribes of Israel and you take 12,000 out of each one, how many do you end up with? 144,000. And it's not Jehovah's Witnesses, it's Jews. See? Next time they come to your door, you just ask them, "My, are you a Jew? You don't look like one." "Well, no, I'm not a Jew." "Well, then you can't be one of the 144,000 because they have to be Jews." See? That's what the book says. 12,000 from each one of the 12 tribes. Now, can you get it any plainer than that? Okay, back to Jeremiah. That was us all free for nothing. I didn't intend to do that either. Jeremiah 31. Now, verse 32. This new covenant is not going to be according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt. So that was where we first started this afternoon, back in Exodus 19, when Israel was gathered around Mount Sinai and God was getting ready to give them the law. Now, Jeremiah says, we're not talking about that covenant. We're not talking about the Ten Commandments and the temple worship. We're talking about a new covenant. See? And now verse 33. But this new covenant that's still out in Israel's future, when the kingdom comes in, see, that's when this covenant will kick in. Where he says, this shall be the covenant, verse 33, that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, saith the Lord. In other words, after all of their history has gone by, and they're now coming into the kingdom, and this new covenant is going to become a reality. God says, I will put my law, in other words, their means of behavior, their daily discipline, I will put my law in their inward part, and I will write it in their hearts, and I will be their God. They shall be my people. What a difference from where they've been for the last couple thousand years, see? Now, verse 34. They shall no more teach every man his neighbor. They shall no more teach every man his brother, saying, know the Lord. For they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest of them, saith the Lord. For I will forgive. See that? I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more. All right, now let's jump all the way back for comparison's sake to where the Jew even today is still resting, and that is Deuteronomy chapter 6. Many of you know where I'm going to go. Deuteronomy chapter 6. Now, this is just for comparison. Look at the vast difference between this first covenant of law and the new covenant that Jeremiah is talking about. Deuteronomy chapter 6, drop in at verse 4. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy might. Now verse 6. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thy heart, but not like it is in Jeremiah, because, see, now in the next verse, what are they still going to have to do? Teach it. See? And thou shalt teach them, that is, these words which God is going to give in His covenant of law, thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children. Thou shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thy house, when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. Thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thy hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes. And thou shalt write them upon the posts of thy house, and on thy gates, and so on and so forth. You see the difference? In other words, beginning with the law, they had to work at it constantly in order to pass it on to their children, in order to practice it. But you see, when they get into that kingdom, it's going to be so glorious, there won't be any need for a law that says, thou shalt not, see? And instead, God is going to write all of His righteousness in their hearts, and they're not going to have any problem living a righteous life. All right, now then, while I'm back in Jeremiah 31, I want to bring you back there for a moment, because here again, I have to disagree with these people who are maintaining that Israel has gone down the tube, and they're gone, they've disappeared, and all these promises have been given to the church. Don't you believe it? Don't you believe it? Israel is still a viable entity, and that's why they're back in the land, and that's why everything is getting ready for these kingdom promises to yet become a reality. All right, now look what the Scripture says to these people who claim that Israel disappeared. Jeremiah 31, verse 35. Now, that may shock some of you people, but you know there's a lot of them out there. I get a magazine every so often, and that's all they trumpet, that the Jew disappeared in 70 A.D., Christ returned in 70 A.D., and all the promises that were given to Israel have disappeared and have now been turned over to the church. Well, that's not what my Bible says, because look at 35. Thus saith the Lord, who gives the sun for a light by day, and the ordinances of the moon and the stars for a light by night, which divideth the sea when the waves roar, the Lord of hosts is his name. Now this is what God says. If those ordinances depart from before me, saith the Lord, then the seed of Israel also shall stop from being a nation before me forever. Thus saith the Lord, if heaven above can be measured, the foundations of the earth searched out beneath, I will cast off all the seed of Israel for all that they have done, because they certainly deserve it. But behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that the city shall be built to the Lord from the tower of Hananel to the gate of the corner. All of God's promises are still going to be fulfilled. Israel hasn't disappeared. Israel is not going to disappear. They are there by virtue of God's decree. And it's a miraculous thing that here they've been called back from every nation on the planet. They resurrected the dead Hebrew language, and then people scoff at it and say they're nothing but imposters. Well, not according to this book. And so you have to remember that all of these promises are still future. They are still valid. Okay, now for the minute that we've got left, let's just stay in Jeremiah for a moment and turn over to chapter 33. Drop down to verse 7. Now these are God's promises. And beloved, if God can break these promises, then what have you and I got to stand on? Nothing. Because if he can break his promise with Israel, he can break it with you and me. But he won't. He hasn't, see? All right, now look at this. Jeremiah 33, starting at verse 7. The I wills are God speaking. And he says, I will cause the captivity of Judah and the captivity of Israel to return. See, now that's all 12 tribes. Israel are the 10, Judah are the 2. And I will build them as at the first. I will cleanse them from all their iniquity, whereby they have sinned against me. I will pardon all their iniquities, whereby they have sinned and whereby they have transgressed. And it shall be to me a name of joy. Why? Because Israel is now at the place that they've been waiting for 4,000 years.
Thank you for watching Through the Bible with Les Feldick. Through the Bible is a partner-supported ministry. If this program has been a help to your study of the Scriptures and you'd like to see others enjoy the teaching, your support would be greatly appreciated. Write to us at Les Feldick Ministries, 30706 West Lona Valley Road, Kenta, Oklahoma, 74552. Or call 1-800-369-7856. Remember, all programs are available in printed form, audio cassette, and videotape. Be sure to tune in next time to Through the Bible with Les Feldick.